The rosebud on the communion table this morning is in honor of a very handsome little boy by the name of Samuel Walter Hendrickson, who was baptized earlier today. He is the son of Scott and Sandy Hendrickson, very faithful members of this church before they moved away. They came back to Wichita this morning for little Sammy's baptism. We're delighted they're here. If you're one of our welcome visitors this morning, we are just about in the middle of a series of sermons on what the Apostle Paul calls the fruits of the Spirit, the personality traits we are expected to develop if we practice the Christian faith. Paul begins with love, joy, peace. We have carefully examined those three. And fourth in the list is patience. The Greek word means literally a long temper. The opposite, in other words, of our colorful expression, he has a short fuse. I've had one of those on occasion, so I am in the awkward position of delivering a sermon on a character trait I have certainly not mastered. Most of us are better at forgiving ourselves than we are anyone else, so when I am reminded to be patient, as I often am by my counselor in residence, I bring up the fact that I don't lose patience in spectacular ways as often as I once did, and that this must mean I am slowly growing in Paul's Christian graces. Unfortunately, a little demon of logic swinging his legs on a corner ledge in my mind whispers that my slight improvement may only be due to getting older and having less energy. The best thing I can say for myself is that at least I know what I need, which is more than can be said for a woman in a story Ernest Cammell loved to tell. Ernie Cammell preached for years at the magnificent Riverside Church in Manhattan, in New York City, and I had the memorable pleasure of hearing him for several days at a lectureship in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He told us about a woman who knew nothing about parrots, had never owned a parrot, but decided one day that a parrot would be good company. So she went to a pet store, bought one and took it home, but came back the next day to tell the pet shop owner, "That parrot has not said a single word yet. Does it have a mirror in the cage?" he asked her. "Parrots like to look at themselves in the mirror." So she bought a mirror and left. The next day she was back complaining that the bird still wasn't speaking. "What about a ladder?" the storekeeper asked. "Parrots really enjoy walking up and down a ladder." So she bought a ladder. But she was back again the next afternoon with the same story. Still no talk. "Does your parrot have a swing? Birds enjoy relaxing on a swing." She bought a swing and went home. But the next day she returned to the store to announce that the bird had died. "I'm terribly sorry to hear that," the storekeeper said. "Did the bird ever say anything at all before it died?" The woman said, "Well, as a matter of fact, it did. Just before it fell off the perch, it said, 'Don't they sell any food at that place?'" The food I need is patience. So I'm trying to listen carefully this morning to my sermon. Let's work on definitions again for a moment. We can rule out certain meanings. Patience does not mean indifference. Paul isn't about to praise people who never lose their temper simply because they don't have any to lose, because they don't have any passion to get them upset about anything. You and I know people who seem patient only because they're too lazy to be impatient, people so uninterested in anything that nothing much ever upsets them, so that when they see us all hot and bothered, they simply yawn and say, "Why not be patient?" What they have is not patience, but apathy, a far worse character trait, in my opinion, than lack of patience. Apathy, from the prefix a, meaning not, and the word pathos, meaning feeling, so that apathy means not feeling. And we were not meant to have whatever comfort comes from that. The greatest Christian priority is to love, to care, and to care, and who knows better than mothers on this day, to care often means to suffer. Ask someone whose dearest friend is desperately ill. Ask someone whose child has stumbled for years from one failure to another. If you care and suffer, you will be tempted at times to lose patience and lash out at the injustice of life or at the willful blindness of someone you love who is hurting himself. Patience is a real accomplishment only when it keeps in check the irritations of a deeply passionate and caring spirit. Living like a slug is not what Paul has in mind when he lists patience as one of the essential fruits of a Christian life. So what does he mean? Something like this, I think, that love can afford not to be in a rush, that it can wait calmly to do its work when the moment comes. That sounds attractive and idealistic, but I must tell you that we are not talking about something easy. In fact, the very man who wrote about patience so often, who listed it first as one of the many characteristics of agape love, the Apostle Paul, was not always patient. He lost it a few times. He exploded on occasion out of his passion for doing things right, and he wrote some extremely nasty comments about people who frustrated his work, hot and hasty words which he probably regretted in calmer moments. Who knows, maybe he listed patience first in his list of the elements of love in 1 Corinthians 13 because he had more trouble with patience than anything else. If I could have him out to lunch today, I would say, "Paul, you recommend patience over and over, but sometimes you really lost it. So what do you want from me? What do you hope for from me?" And I think he would say, "Keep trying and make sure that if you lose it, the issue is not a selfish one, and make sure that the things that upset you are not so trivial that you become chronically impatient." Someone described patience as love stretched out. I like that because when I've lost my temper, I've always rationalized it by explaining how something just snapped. It's a good metaphor. I didn't have enough flexibility. My love didn't stretch far enough. But a question arises about now. Should it stretch forever? Did, for example, the patience of Christ himself ever snap? I think it did. He had a tremendous driving force and passion in his life, and he said and did some things you would certainly want to counsel me about if I did them. He absolutely blistered certain religious leaders by calling them tombs of corruption, disguised by pretended piety. He called them hypocrites repeatedly. He called them poisonous snakes. And when he took a whip in hand, threw tables upside down, scattered other people's money all over the temple paving stones, and said, "You have turned my father's house into a den of thieves," his patience had surely reached its limit. But most of us really can't take much consolation from that. The patience we lose is not so often over important things as it is over trivia. We can't wait. In an irony duly noted last week by a certain domestic observer, I was even impatient once while at work on a sermon about patience. Not angry, just in too big a hurry to get something done which wasn't all that important anyway. How I sympathize with the apostle when he says, "I keep on doing things I don't want to do." I think he had a lifelong struggle with impatience. So he preached about it to himself as well as to others, as I do now. I have a hunch Paul was a great deal like that crusty old Victorian philosopher Thomas Carlyle, who wrote once in a letter, "I have a natural talent for being in a hurry, which is a very bad talent." Does anybody in this room blush with me when you hear that? It's hard for people in a hurry to be patient. If you need a defense, I'll offer you the one I use, that there has always been so much to get done and so finite a time in which to do it, that impatience at times is simply the price certain type A people pay because of the work they do. Now, there must be something to that, because on a trip to a far-off island not long ago, when I was unable to phone or be phoned, to type or counsel or do a wedding or a funeral or a christening, I became so patient that my resident counselor thought I might be ill. I rested, and I discovered how marvelously easy it is to be patient while resting. Things happen in the mind while resting that make it creative. John Ruskin, another English essayist of the 19th century who knew a great deal about music, said that there is no music in a rest, but that there's the making of music in it. Patience is like a rest in music. the pregnant interim between moments of action. My favorite definition for it may be creative waiting. But not in a closet. Patience has no meaning except in the midst of unruly life where it can be tested. When the apostle says love is patient, he knows as well as anyone that it's easy to love people in the abstract, to be patient with them. On Sunday morning, for example, while the minister talks about patience, and not a single unlovely person is sitting next to us in need of a breath mint, poking us with a sharp elbow, annoying us with a will of their own. One of our own great congregational preachers, Henry Ward Beecher, observed once that there is no such thing as preaching patience to people. He must have tried it at times, as I'm doing now, but he said it really doesn't work. There's no such thing as preaching patience to people unless, he said, the sermon is so long they have to practice it while they listen. Patience, he said, is learned out in the hurly-burly world, and we all see it happening or not happening every day. We witness, for example, two ways of blowing the horn of a car. One way is patient. We've been sitting there daydreaming. The light changes. We don't notice. And the driver behind us does one of those quick little taps to call attention gently to the problem. You know, beep. Translation of that is, have you nodded off, sir? Time to move on now, I think, so the rest of us can get where we're going. An almost apologetic little wake-up call which makes us feel a little guilty on the one hand and a little grateful on the other that the person we inconvenienced was so polite. But we've all had the other kind. The long, loud, angry, prolonged blast, which isn't just meant to call attention to the problem, but more than that, to call attention to what the honker feels about it. So Mr. Myers' self-confessed failure at times in the matter of patience, do you know any remedies? Well, I do, even if, like some people I know on medication, I forget once in a while to take them. And the first one is thicken your skin deliberately so you're not so touchy. Once upon a time, I used something called tough skin out of a bottle to make the ends of my fingers tougher for gripping and pitching a ball. The Apostle Paul is trying to market a psychological tough skin for supersensitive egos. Second, inoculate yourself with mild doses of self-criticism so that when outside criticism comes, you can say, hey, that's nothing. I've already said far worse things about myself. Third, cultivate a convenient forgettery. Let slights pass out of mind. I read that a college turned down George Washington Carver when it found out he was black. Years later, when he was famous, a man asked him what college that was, since he had never mentioned the name. Carver brushed off the question. Oh, that doesn't matter. And he would not tell. And finally, simple gratitude helps. I was often in medical wards in wartime. I asked a boy once who had lost an arm to a German 88 millimeter shell, that gun they used with such incredible accuracy, how he felt about things. "You've paid a heavy price losing an arm." He said, "Oh, actually, I'm pretty lucky. Some of my best friends never made it, and I'm on my way home." Filled with gratitude, he was patiently waiting. Sometimes when patience has been forced on me, when I've had to wait, a surprise blessing has come. Something like what happened many years ago to passengers on a ship called the Baltic. When another ship, the Republic, sent word that it was sinking and needed help, the great rescuing liner circled around and around after it reached the supposed location, whistling mournfully and poking its nose through a dense fog, trying to find the dying ship. All afternoon the search went on, and when night came, most of the passengers on the Baltic were sick at heart, convinced that it would be impossible to bring rescue until morning. They were wrong. As the night grew darker, it became possible to see the lights of the sinking ship, and what couldn't be done in the fog of the day became clear in the darkness of the night. You and I have been there, and we will be. And in those times, I hope some friend will replay for me the message of this sermon and remind me to be patient.